Thanks for listening to Outcast World. You lock your front door, don't you? You wouldn't go out and leave the front door open. Well, that's essentially what you're doing when you're not using a VPN. Right now, your data is being tracked, stored, and sold by loads of people. For a lot of people that are listening to this show, that is not just annoying, it can also be very risky. NordVPN fixes it. It's fast, it's reliable, it's number one for consumers, and it takes less time to set up than ordering a takeaway. Outcast World listeners can get NordVPN for under £3 a month. That is up to 75% off. Just go to outcastworld.net. The link's at the top. Turn it on. Forget about it. Make yourself safer online with the number one NordVPN for under £3 a month at outcastworld.net.
On today's episode.
Sometimes you just get in a bit of a bad groove and you start having bad shows, and particularly if you're doing 5 or 6 shows a day, which isn't unheard of in Edinburgh, yeah, and you bomb 5 times in a day, like, that is, and you're in a place full of people where you're constantly comparing yourself to everyone. You know, you've got some of the best comedians ever in the world are there. You've got some of the people who are at your level who are having an amazing run, and you're there stinking gaffs out all day.
Hello and welcome to Outcast World. It's Graham and I am in sunny Scotland. That's stretching the truth slightly. It's a lot less sunny than England. This is weird in Scotland at the moment. I'm up here and the grass is green. The grass in England has been non-existent for 3 months. It's actually really refreshing. I've been on the phone to people, kind of like reverse showing off, you know. It's like, oh, you'll never guess how cold it is here. People, they're impressed. Well, they say they are. Anyway, I'm in Scotland getting ready for the Edinburgh Fringe. And over the next few weeks on the show, we're going to be bringing you some of my favourite moments from the Fringe over the last few years and some of the hottest new people who are going to be at this year's Fringe as well. Some fascinating new people, some great chats with some comedians, some artists, all to come on Outcast World. Here from Edinburgh, I'm going to be doing a number of special episodes as well. So excited to get the new season of Outcast World moving as we come back from our summer holidays live from Scotland.
Queer politics.
When Farage says jump, Labour might say how high.
And it's not true. It's offering people false hope.
Sex.
Dating apps have become a breeding ground for the worst of human behaviours.
And culture.
What do you want, homie? When we get together, we be simple. Simple.
He will like go nosh himself off.
This is Outcast World.
Today we start with something really different, partially in Italian, but don't worry, we do provide subtitles. What subtitles called when someone reads them out loud? Translation, that's it. Compagnia Belanda are an independent Italian dance company from Friuli Venezia Giulia. Right up in, I think I've said that really badly wrong, but anyway, right up in Italy's far northeastern corner, close to the Slovenian border. They were founded by creative partners Giovanni and Claudia. And what really interested me about them is where this all began. Giovanni didn't come through ballet school or a conservatoire. His background is in breaking and hip-hop culture. Breaking means breakdancing, I think. And they've taken that foundation and pushed it into contemporary dance and performance, and some of the things behind it are really interesting, some of the inspirations behind their new work as well. Even the company's name is rooted in where they come from. Belanda comes from the Friulian expression biele ande, evoking belonging, tradition and cultural heritage. And they brought a really intriguing show to the Edinburgh Fringe as well, called, right, again, this is in Italian, forgive if I forget it wrong, Il Canto dell'Asiolo. Hang on, let's do that again. It's called Il Canto dell'Asiolo, the Song of the Scops Owl. Now, the Scops Owl is a tiny bird found in the Italian cast that you'll see almost, but you never actually see it, apparently, hardly ever. Instead, you know it's there because of its call. It's a single note, repeated through the summer night, never really resolving. And that, guys, is a metaphor for the whole show. Relationships, intimacy, and the feeling of something continually returning without ever quite being resolved. We've all been in them situationships. Over 45 minutes, they explained it all to me. Don't worry, we don't have to sit through the full 45 minutes. I've cut it down for you. But then they told me all about this extraordinary combination of breaking and contemporary dance to explore desire, tenderness, control, dependency, and rupture between two people. So ahead of their Fringe performance, I wanted to meet them. By the way, also coming up on the show today, I should have sold this at the start, is the brilliant Dan Tiernan as well. And a conversation that I had with him a few years ago about his Edinburgh Fringe show at Edinburgh before it became really, really, really big. He's really blown up on social media since. So that is coming up. Dan Tiernan. Maybe I should have gone top with Dan Tiernan. Dan Tiernan from our archives coming up in a bit. But ahead of their Fringe performance, I wanted to meet Compania Belanda and find out how you get from breaking in a small corner of northeastern Italy to creating a show like this and bringing it all the way to Edinburgh.
Queer politics, sex and culture. Outcast World.
So this is your first ever Edinburgh Fringe, isn't it? How are you feeling about it?
Under pressure, and at the same time we have a little bit of anxious. We are a little bit anxious.
Mm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting. We are just coming back home from 3 weeks performing every day, but just a shorter piece, so 20 minutes, touring through Spain. So something similar, but not so, not completely.
So let's go back to the start. Giovanni, you didn't come through ballet school or formal training. Do you want to tell us how your journey started?
Giovanni will speak Italian. I will translate, just to let you know.
Okay.
Io ho iniziato con la breakdance, quindi come tutti, vedendo i ragazzi ballare per strada e volendo imitare e riprodurre quello che facevano loro. Quindi.
Says he started with breakdance. So as almost all the b-boys, he started watching and seeing someone else doing it and trying to reply and to repeat what he was watching.
Sì, molto semplice.
So you're
easiest.
So just watch and learn, yeah. So your company name, tell us the story about that and the reason you built your identity around it.
Perché si chiama Compagnia, perché si chiama Belanda, perché qui c'è una lingua, che è il fulano, che possiede questo termine, Belanda, che si dice Bieleande. In realtà, ed è quando tu hai un bel modo di fare, quando hai un bel modo di muoverti, quando hai un bel modo di porti nelle cose. Quindi quando ti sai muovere bene nelle situazioni. Mi piaceva come suonava e da lì l'idea del ti sai muovere bene, che è anche abbastanza abbinabile alla danza, no?
He says that we have a language, recognized language here in our region, which is Friulano. And in Friulano there is a way to say that you have a style in moving, you have a good way to move, which is biele ande, two words. And he just put them together in Belanda, and it's a nice way to move and that could fit easily for the dancing field. And so he decided to put a little bit of tradition and something from this specific region into the name.
Where you are from is really important to you, isn't it? How much inspiration did you take from your identity, your regional identity, and put it in your work?
Rispondo io. Is something that is because of our region and our, let me say, loneliness, because it's the last region before the next nation, which is Slovenia. And so we live on the border and we live very far from the center of the nation. And there is a lot of influences from this living on the border. And from the beginning, Giovanni told me that when he started to dance, everything, all the videos like VHS recorded, arrived very late. So everything was in delay respect to what was happening in reality. And so he started soon to say, if I want to be on the time, I need to find my own signature, my own version of everything. Because if I wait for the material coming from outside, I will always be on delay. So there is a little bit of tradition, but also a need to stay on time because of the geographical situation where we live.
So the show is named after the Scops owl. Paint that picture for me. You're standing in the Italian cast on a summer night. What do you hear, and why did that sound become your show?
Perché l'Assiolo?
Perché volevamo collegarci a qualcosa di concreto, no? Quindi volevamo legarci a qualcosa di concreto che almeno qui si vive abbastanza facilmente, e quindi dalle cose concrete passare a cose meno concrete, meno tangibili. E questo assiolo è qualcosa che c'è solo qui fondamentalmente, no? Ed è particolare perché questo uccellino migra dall'Africa ed è una delle poche altre regioni o parti del mondo che visita, è il Friuli. E ci piaceva utilizzarlo per dare anche un carattere un po' diverso poi a questo canto. È legata anche a qualcosa di tradizionale, quindi qualcosa di misterioso, qualcosa di un pochettino più esoterico, e ci piaceva unire questi giochi.
He says that the sound that is in the title is because in this region there is a bird which travels from Africa to Europe,
sì.
And in Italy it stops here in this area. And so he wanted to start from something very concrete to something more emotional. And so in our tradition, this sound is an omen of changing. It's because the bird is not visible, it's very little. But the sound he makes is very powerful, and you can listen it very far from the bird. And so during the nights, during the summer and spring nights, he starts to sing all night long, looking for a partner, and also telling that the change is coming. The change is the summer, the spring.
Is that the message, the idea of the change is coming? Is that the message that you want to have behind the piece?
Yeah. Il messaggio è riguardo al cambiamento.
Sì, yeah. Sì, perché c'è un cambiamento che lo senti ma non lo riesci a percepire effettivamente, no? Tutto attorno sta cambiando ma tu dentro non lo riesci a vedere. Questo è un po' anche il gioco delle coppie, no? Che all'interno della coppia qualcuno sta cambiando, ma l'altro non riesce a vedere il cambiamento invece interiore, o il cambiamento comunque grande che l'altro compagno o la compagna sta avendo, ma non sempre si riesce a vedere. Quindi quando ci si accorge di questa cosa, è un po' tardi, no?
He says, yes, it's about changing in relationships, in couple relationships, where when one of the two is listening that something is changing in the other part of the relation, but it's not something you can see, but you can feel somehow, and or maybe you cannot. You can understand that something is not anymore the same, but you cannot understand what actually is not the same anymore.
So is there something in this, some of the messaging behind this to do with the roles people play in relationships and them changing?
Absolutely. Yes.
It really fascinates me, your use of almost sound design incorporated into your live dance music performance. The microphones picking up your breath, your footsteps, and feeding it back into the performance. I was reading about it. It fascinates me. Tell me about that.
del suono e dei microfoni.
Mm-hmm, perché allora è una cosa che è nata un po' di anni fa, questa roba di utilizzare i microfoni, almeno per quanto riguardava noi, e di usare anche proprio lo spazio in cui noi ci esibiamo come cassa armonica, in modo tale che anche lei possa avere, essere sempre diversa, perché ogni spazio è diverso, ogni teatro è diverso, ogni luogo è diverso, quindi suonerà sempre diverso. E questa cosa mi piace molto, che crea una cosa che c'è solo lì in quel momento e poi è irripetibile, perché ogni luogo è diverso, quindi ogni luogo suona in questo modo.
He says that from one side it's a research that started years ago, almost 10 years ago already, about using microphones catching the sound and using the environment and the venue itself as a soundbox. So every performance in every different place comes out in a different, with a different sound.
E anche volevamo, per una volta, utilizzare che tutto nasceva dal centro, no? I microfoni prendono il suono che si creano nel centro, e le discussioni sono nel centro del tappeto, è tutto lì dentro che parte. Quindi avevamo bisogno di avere come una lente di ingrandimento su quello che accadeva lì dentro. Il pubblico potesse essere immerso sia visivamente che anche a livello uditivo. E anche per quello la scelta di avere i microfoni che ingrandiscono l'immagine e l'ascolto, ma anche danzare in pochissimi metri quadrati, quindi tutto accade in una stanza di 4 metri per 5, quindi è molto claustrofobico, no?
He says that also is about trying to use like a close-up lens on the situation in the center of everything. Everything comes from the center, from this room, 4-5 meters space in the center of the scene, and everything comes from that. So words amplified from the microphones, hit to the floor amplified from the microphones, and they themselves create the rhythm of the situation. So it's a very very quick answer coming from the microphone themselves into our body and going on like that. And in order to have a claustrophobic feeling, to let the audience come closer as much as possible.
So you use spoken language in the piece, but then you break it down until it stops really kind of meaning anything and becomes rhythm. Why do you do that to the words?
Perché lo facciamo con le parole?
Perché a volte il corpo fa la domanda e la voce dà la risposta, ma altre volte è la voce a dare la domanda e dà la risposta del corpo. Ci sembrava che fosse, anche se magari la lingua non è la lingua inglese, comunque enfatizza e amplifica le nostre situazioni emotive. Se qualcuno piange, anche se non parla la mia lingua, lo riconosco. Se qualcuno ha un accento nervoso o arrabbiato, anche se non parla la mia lingua, lo riesco a comprendere. Se qualcuno è gentile, educato, anche se non ho capito cosa mi dice, lo riesco a percepire, perché il tono sottolinea l'azione. Non so, uso sempre questo esempio. Si capisce già da come camminano se i genitori sono arrabbiati oppure no. Quindi è una cosa molto dentro di noi, credo, questa cosa dell'ascolto anche con le orecchie, dei suoni e del timbro della voce, no?
He says that we wanted to put one more channel of language, which is not just language but also voice tone. So even if maybe it's not completely understandable what we are talking about because Italian and not English, but there is the intention and also the tone of our voice that we think could add something more, some more message into it. Because also he says sometimes the body creates a question and the voice reply. And sometimes it's the opposite. And because we will talk during the movement, it's not just speech. There is a lot of breath, a different kind of rhythm due to the movement. And so we just try to, we think it can work even better as a global message or global feeling that we want to share with the audience.
A lot of the listeners to this show in particular have built relationships without a rule book. Does this show speak to people whose relationships don't fit in the usual boxes?
Absolutely. We think that this show speak about relationships between two people. That's it. Whoever. And probably also friendship. And also whatever kind of relationship. We think we live through relationships made by two people, because it's always me, myself, and someone else. And it's always about balancing power and tenderness and leading or letting lead someone. And are just, of course, we are male and female, and so the surface, it's easy to be understood as a relationship, a love relationship or sexual relationship between a man and a woman. It's just about relationships between two people.
Right, thank you. I'm really looking forward to catching the show, so I look forward to seeing you then. Do you want to tell us where we can catch the show and where people can find out more about you?
So we have our website, compagniabellanda.com, easy. We have our Instagram account, and we will be in Edinburgh from 18 until 30 in Dance Base 1. And also we will travel through Europe right after, and in Italy as well. And we used to share all the dates on our accounts. Yes.
Right. Claudia Giovanni, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a real pleasure speaking to you.
Queer politics, sex and culture. Outcast World.
Still to come on this edition of Outcast World from the Edinburgh Fringe, we're going to be heading back into the Fringe archives. Some of the greatest fringes of all time. And I've had some great fringes. Yes, he's gay. He's dyspraxic. He's become, well, he's Mancunian as well. Don't hold that against him. He's become one of the most distinctive comics to emerge from the UK stand-up circuit in recent years. He's a very funny guy. And a few years ago, here in Edinburgh, I caught up with Dan Tiernan. And that conversation is on the way now.
Right, seeing as this is an LGBTQ plus podcast and you are gay, tell us how you came out. We want to know. We've got to know.
So yeah, I came out like in stages, I guess. Like when I was 18, I came out to like I'd say like my close friends, but never my family or anything. Not because I thought they'd have an issue, but I just couldn't be arsed. Like there wasn't like much to say really. Yeah. And then when I was like 20 and I started doing stand up, I think about 6 months in, I was like looking for angles of like interesting stuff to talk about, and like obviously naturally I was like, well, I have to talk about being gay. And then when I started doing it on stage, I was like, well, I've got to tell my mum and my dad really. If I'm telling like people in Stoke, you know, who I've never met before, then I've got to tell them. And then I guess once I was doing it on stage, then it felt like I was officially out, really, which was never anything I'd planned, but that's just sort of how it happened. And then
so you did it for content, really, or you just kept it quiet?
Pretty much. Like, yeah, well, what it was is that I found up until that point, when I got close with people, I would then, I would sort of come out to like new friends and stuff. Yeah. But it meant that I had to keep coming out over and over again. Whereas when I started doing it on stage, it meant that then I was just out. Like, it was just, you know, like you just have to watch a clip on the internet and it was known. And then, you know, before I knew it, I had it like my Instagram bio and stuff. And then I, So that's sort of how it happened, really.
So I read that, and I don't know if this was just used for a joke, because as we've discussed, some stuff is just for the bants, really. But what's this about the Royal Marines didn't want you? Did you apply to be in the Royal Marines? Surely not.
No, I didn't. Oh, disappointed.
I thought you would have done there. Just I thought I'll have that as a question.
A lot of it is true, but some of it's just absolute nonsense. Yeah, that bit's definitely not true.
So I'm talking to you now. Are you in your own place now? Have you moved out your mum's?
Yeah, I do live on my own. Yes, that's another lie, I'm afraid. Yeah. because I talk on stage about living at my mum's.
You do.
I did for years, though, so, you know.
Yeah, so you're entitled to say
it's
it.
It's all based on truth. Yeah, exactly.
So you've got the Edinburgh Festival show coming up in... It's all August, isn't it? That's when the Edinburgh Festival's on.
All of August, so I've got my debut show going under. Basically, it's like my fifth time going to the Fringe, but my first time doing an hour just on my own. So basically you perform every day. So my run starts on the 31st of July, and then I think it goes up until the 28th of August. And I perform every day apart from the 14th.
Seven days a week. So you're doing 7 nights a week continuously for a month with one day off.
Yeah. And I'll probably do other shows to promote that show as well. So it is mental. I'm hoping to take it a bit easier this year because it's my debut hour. But in previous years, I've done hundreds of shows in a month kind of thing. So it's really, really, really intense. Like your voice goes after few days and stuff, so you've got to try and manage that, but it's incredible. If you've never been to the Fringe, I cannot recommend it enough. It's so good.
Good, but it's expensive though, isn't it? Even more expensive for on your part than being a punter, isn't it, really?
Sure. Well, I mean, the big thing is accommodation, so that's obviously something punters have to go. The difference is though, if you're a punter, it's 2 or 3 days. Having to pay those prices for accommodation for a whole month is just insane. Mine this year is $1,400 for the month, which is just extortionate.
What are you staying in? Because I've been before and I stayed in university halls. I got the cheapest uni halls we could get, a little single room, a single bed. Felt like I was back at my nan's back in the day.
I stayed in the uni halls before as well. So this year, it's just like a house with 4 other comedians, which should be quite nice. But in previous years, I've absolutely slummed it before. I've stayed on sofas and stuff like that, but it's just not worth it, for your mental health. You need your own space, really.
So what can people expect from your show if they go and see it this year?
Sure. So because it's my first hour, it's sort of greatest hits, really. Just basically everything I've ever written all sort of packed into sort of 50 minutes. We call it an hour, but really it's about 50 minutes. Yeah. Some new stuff I've written as well. It's just the perfect introduction to me as a stand-up comedian, and my perspective on the world. I write loads of... My style is I write just jokes, basically, about me. So they're not one-liners per se, because they are actually about my life. Just basically 50 minutes of me talking about myself, hopefully, in an entertaining manner.
Do you ever do new stuff there then, or is it just stuff that you've tried out elsewhere? It's all the biggest hits, like you said, and nothing new.
So I've got about 15 previews left. I've done 8. A preview is basically where you do before Edinburgh or before a tour, you just do a practice in front of an audience. Yeah. So I've got loads of those on sale across the country, and in those I'm trying out new stuff. So absolutely, there will be stuff that's new now, but hopefully by the time I get to Edinburgh it won't be new.
You'll have tried.
We'll see. In theory.
Is that what you do then? You go around? Is that normal to do a tour of the country before you get to Edinburgh to try your stuff so you've got really good stuff for Edinburgh?
It's not really a tour per se, because it's a lot of you at, say, an open mic night, you might do an hour, they'll let you do an hour at the end, or maybe I'll just throw a one-off one in, say, Manchester. It's a lot scattier than the tour. There's just anywhere that can give me an hour of stage time with an audience. That's perfect. So that's exactly what everyone does. But it's called preview. So at the moment, because we're in June, it's preview season. So So everyone's who's going to Edinburgh is like previewing their shows at
right,
the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And you go on with like a notepad and stuff and usually sell tickets like dead cheap, like a fiver or whatever.
But so you're going up and as you're doing your set, you're writing down how it went whilst you're on stage.
That's how some people work. That's not how I work.
What do you do?
I voice record it.
Right.
And then I'll listen to the voice recording afterwards. And my recent process is I'll rank every new joke out of five based on the response.
Right.
And the idea is as I'm going through that, I'll usually, hopefully start writing down new notes. And then often when you're in that frame of mind, you end up writing new jokes as well or changing them. And then you're basically just trying to expand and make the next preview better than the last one, really.
Yeah.
A lot of writing notes for your future self of like, and then when the next preview comes, I'll look through all of that and then scatter around and maybe I'll change the order around or I'll think this doesn't work, but I really think it's funny. What if I change the word in here? You go like that. It is kind of torture. Don't get me wrong. Like,
I couldn't do it. I could not do it. It just seems like it's the level of insecurity you must. I mean, you don't know because you're really good at it. But especially in the beginning, the level of insecurity that like comics must feel, especially to begin with.
Yeah, I'm still deeply insecure. Please don't.
Yeah.
Please know that. But yeah, I think less so about stand-up specifically since when I started. But it literally takes one bad gig and you think you're the worst comic ever and you shouldn't be doing it. Like, it can happen so easily. I think I was saying speaking with friends, like, you have one gig and you say, look, it was a one-off. But when if you have, say, three bad gigs in a row, like, that is enough to...
That can happen, though, can't it?
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Easily, yeah.
Completely can happen. And particularly Edinburgh is a place where you can be really insecure because you're working so hard and sometimes you just get in a bit of a bad groove and you start having bad shows. And particularly if you're doing five or six shows a day, which isn't unheard of in Edinburgh,
yeah.
And you bomb five times in a day, like that is, and you're in a place full of people where you're constantly comparing yourself to everyone. You know, you've got some of the best comedians ever in the world are there. You've got some of the people who are at your level who are having an amazing run and you're there stinking gaffs out all day. It's like, yeah. And you don't know what's happening. Like, I always have a point where I'm like, I'm getting worse. What is going on? I'm getting worse. What's happening?
What do you do mental health wise then? Because you've got to decompress sometimes. Something you're doing like five shows a day, and they're all challenging, even if they go really well. What do you do so that your head doesn't fall off?
So, I mean, I think a huge thing is like having a good group of friends who are also comics in Edinburgh who are, you know, and sometimes the wrong group can be toxic or whatever. I think it's important
totally.
To have a group of people who genuinely want to support each other and, lift each other up and people you can vent to and talk about your concerns and stuff and speak to about bad gigs or opportunities you've missed or whatever. I don't want to sound hypocritical because a lot of these things I don't actually put in place, but I definitely should. But I try to exercise. Like, that's the one thing that
they do
always
helps.
It always helps, but I never bloody do it. Like, but it literally. So last year I was quite good. I was running pretty much every day before my shows, which is just like, it's so.
That's
so
the best
important.
Way to go into anything like that, isn't it? When you've just exercised, but it's getting yourself in the frame of mind where you're like, you want to do it, isn't it, really?
Yeah, exactly. And it's so easy to fall out of. And then like, I think, again, this is where I'm really hypocritical, is like not drinking too much. But last year I was an absolute piss cannon, but like... I'm gonna try to monitor that. Try and eat all right. Like, yeah, they're the only things you really can do. I guess there's some things that people say, like you should try and get out of the festival for a day. Go to Glasgow if you've got the time for a day. Try and get out of it. You not compare yourself to other people. It's so much easier said than done. But everyone's on their own journey. I think on the whole, though, like. I definitely struggle with my mental health. However, I struggle with my mental health all year round. So for me, just being around comedy, I am as much as at times it can be difficult, I am just genuinely delighted to be there. Like so delighted. You know, there's only one Edinburgh Fringe in the whole world. And like, just to be able to go and do the thing you love constantly all day and just be completely around it. And like, yeah, it is amazing. So I think I just constantly remind myself of that. Like, yeah, you're at the fringe and you love this.
Enjoy it.
And enjoy it. And sure, there are moments and you've just got to let them happen and stuff. Yeah.
Is it bitchy your world?
Oh my God. Yeah.
I thought it might be. I bet it's deep and intelligent bitchy, isn't it, as well? It's not like basic. It's like fucking to the root of your soul kind of bitchy.
Well, because I guess all industries like this, like acting or whatever, they're all going to be bitchy. I think the main thing with stand-up is it's so personal because your professional thing is you. It's you that's going on stage. It's you that's doing that. You've got no team behind you. It's literally you.
Yes.
So it's, very, there's a lot of people sort of talking and you know, God, no, I'd hate to know. I genuinely wouldn't just not like to know what people say.
Just don't
want to
know. I always think that I don't want to know what people say.
They can say what they want.
Just don't tell me. That's the main thing, isn't it?
Make sure it doesn't get back to me because then.
Absolutely. So that sounds really exciting. If anyone listening right now wants to go and see you at the Edinburgh Festival, where are you going to be on? How can they find out where to get tickets?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm at Monkey Barrel 2 for the whole month at 10 p.m. every day except the 14th. And as I said, I've got loads of previews in cities all across the country before August. So if you go on my Instagram, in my bio, there's a little link tree there. And that's got tickets for my Edinburgh show. And tickets for all the previews. Or if you're not on Instagram, if you just Google Dantin in Edinburgh, that should get you there, I reckon.
When you're there, you're going to fire up the old grinder. I remember when I went to Edinburgh, fired up the old grinder, and it was busy. It was busy.
It should be. Well, it's a load of creatives, isn't it? So it should be pretty gay, you'd hope. But yeah, it's. I mean, it's never really been for me in previous years, but it has. Like my mate said last year, like, do you not find Edinburgh is an incredibly horny place?
That I found that.
Because it's just people there for a month, like.
Yes.
Like, frustrated. Everyone's a bit delirious and mad. So, yeah, I think I'll make sure it's downloaded this year.
Yeah, I'll get the app re-downloaded, that old chestnut. Yeah. Right then, mate. Well, if anyone in Edinburgh, go and see him. He is amazing, Dantin and the comedian. And if you're on Grindr in Edinburgh, fire it up. You might catch him on there as well. Mate, thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been a blast.
This is Outcast World.
Stay with me. This is incredibly simple. If you've ever used Grindr, Googled something rather personal, or posted anything political, your data is already being tracked and sold. Think about that. A VPN can make you a lot safer. NordVPN takes about 2 minutes to set up, one click to turn on, and it just runs in the background. There's no effort after that. It's consistently voted number one across a load of metrics for consumers. It's fast, it's secure, and there's no drop-offs. Outcast World listeners can get up to 75% off NordVPN right now, which brings it down to under £3 a month. Go to outcastworld.net. Top of the page, tap the link, then you're done. Outcastworld.net for up to 75% off NordVPN.